mine, because I don't ever want to lead, and I probably won't do my fourth and fifth step. And that was my attitude. There was an old timer in the program then named Fred Sweeney, and I would see him at the Tuesday night 10th and Powell meeting, and that was the one meeting that was close enough that I could walk to, so I always went to that meeting. And every week, Fred would walk up to me and he'd say, "Well, kid, how's your optical rectitis?" And I'd glare at him and say, "Fine." And this went on week after week after week after week. Finally, one week he said, "Well, kid, how's your optical rectitis this week?" And I glared at him and said, "Fine." And he said, "Do you even know what that means?" And I, "No." And he said, "Well, it's when your optic nerve and your rectal nerve gets crossed and you look at everything with a shitty attitude. And that's you, kid. You got a shitty attitude." And I raised my fist. I almost decked that poor old man, you know. I came that close to decking him. But that's what I looked like at a year sober. Filled with rage, filled with anger. You know, the only emotions I knew were anger and fear. Once I got sober, I started having horrendous anxiety attacks and panic attacks. I never had those when I was drinking, but sober I had them. And I had nothing to dull the emotional pain that I was in. And finally, after coming to meetings for a little over a year, I was finally able to truly accept that I was an alcoholic and I was powerless over alcohol. Excuse me. And that my life had become unmanageable due to my alcoholism and not all this stuff out here. And at that same time, when I finally was able to accept my powerlessness, I was able to accept the we of the program. And what that did was that allowed me to become a little more open to asking for help. You know, I wasn't alone anymore. By completing step one, I admitted that I needed you too. You know, and every time I ask for help, I'm reaching outside myself for power. And that was the beginning of my spiritual journey, was when I finally accepted step one. And this was really the start of my recovery. You know, I am powerless over alcohol. If I'm powerless, that means I can't do anything about it. So I'm doomed. I'm doomed to live this miserable existence of fear and anger and guilt and shame and remorse. And I wouldn't have stayed sober with just stopping there. But we move on to step two. And I call step two the hope step. Because that's where I first truly began to see that there was hope for me. I was in step two. You know, it told me that I could be restored. And by accepting step one, that opened me up to asking for help, which is necessary for step two. You have to be willing to ask for help. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is divided into three parts. You know, part one, we identify the problem. Part two tells us about the solution. And then the rest of the book, which is the majority of it, explains in detail how to take the solution and apply it to our daily life. Now, the rest of the book tells me how to learn to live life on life's terms. The rest of the book tells me how I can become an emotional feeling human being and be okay in the now today. You know, I don't have to escape anymore. I don't have to run from problems. You know, I have a way through them. You know, I was always trying to fix my internal problem with outside things. But the book gave me an internal solution for my internal problem. Okay. Even without alcohol, a lot of times we go to other things to give us comfort. We turn to people, we turn to, you know, places, we money, work, the internet, gambling, food. You know, we look to other things to make us feel better instead of wanting to do that work inside, that inside work, because recovery is an inside job. You know, rehab calls that substitute addictions. You know, we quit drinking and instead of working on ourselves, we reach out here for something else to make us feel good. You know, but I cannot fix a soul sickness with externals. You know, the big book suggests that I have to do internal work. And when my spiritual abnormality is fixed, the rest of my life begins to straighten out, or at least I can see how to go about straightening it out. You know, I profess to believe in God, but my daily life did not reflect it. You know, I continued to look for things to fill my God hole. You know, I had my spiritual experience I had in January 24th, 1981. That's 2 years before I actually sobered up. And, you know, I told you last week that the way I got here was through the judicial system. I struck a 17-year-old girl drunk. She died, and I was arrested for DUI, homicide by vehicle. I had walked away from God at age 22. And at age 34, when this accident happened, I didn't want anything to do with God. You know, I only thought God was going to punish me. But God took care of me. God did for me what I was unable to do for myself. A friend had asked her minister to stop and see me. He did. I'm sure all I did was probably spout anger at him. But after he left, I got to thinking, you know, I bet Linda asked him to stop by. Linda was a woman I taught with. And so I called Linda to thank her for having her minister stop by, and she said, "Mary Lou, is there anything else I can do for you?" Now, I had not been inside the church door for 12 years. And she said, and I said, "Yes, I want to go to church on Sunday." And she said, "Do you want to go now?" And out of my mouth came the word, "Yes." And she said, "I'll be there in 10 minutes. And she hung up. And I can remember sitting there with the phone still in my hand saying, "Why did I say that? God doesn't want anything to do with me. God's only going to punish me. Why did I say that?" She was there in 10 minutes, and I got up and got in her car, and we went to her church. It was about 7:30 at night. Now today I know what was happening. Today I know that I was so locked up inside that I could not open the door to my soul, even a teeny little crack from the inside. So God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. God was opening that door from the outside. And we got to her church, and it was dark, and she asked me, she said, "Do you want me to turn on the lights?" Because all that were on was some security lights, and I screamed at her no, because I didn't want to be in light. I belonged in darkness. That's where I felt comfortable. And I can't tell you what all happened in that darkened sanctuary that night. I can tell you that I cried the first tears I'd cried in years. I cried my heart out to God that night. And when it was, you know, and I also screamed at God and hollered at God because I was very angry at God. I blamed him for everything that had happened to me in the past 12 years. You know, it was all his fault. He did it. It was his fault. But when it was over with, I had an inner peace. And I knew that God had forgiven me for striking that girl with my car, and he'd also forgiven me for the past, you know, 14 years of alcoholic degradation that I'd been living. And I was able to go home and sleep for the first time since the accident. And when I got up the next day, I still had that peace inside. And I knew, wow, this was something real. It just wasn't an emotional thing of the night before. And I was able to go to school and function as a teacher should function that day. And when I got home from school that day, Linda's car and another teacher's car were at my house. And I couldn't figure out what they were doing there because the building they taught at got out 15 minutes after the building I was at. But I knew that people were afraid I was going to do something to hurt myself. And I thought, they're just here to check on me. And we went in the house and I started to make coffee. And Linda put her arms around me and she said, Mary Lou, I have to tell you, we heard on the news today that the girl died. Now, I hated myself in that moment more than I'd ever hated myself in my life. All I could say is, I'm a murderer. I killed a 17-year-old girl. But Linda said something really, really important. She said, Mary Lou, you knew last night God had forgiven you. When you got up this morning, you still had his peace and forgiveness with you. And you've had his peace and forgiveness with you all day long. You had his peace and forgiveness with you when you walked through that door 10 minutes ago. And God's not going to take that forgiveness away from you now just because you know that she's dead. Now, I clung to that. The only ray of light in my tunnel of darkness was that God had forgiven me. I could not forgive myself. I beat myself up with that guilt, that shame, that remorse, that hatred, day in and day out for the next 2 years. And that guilt and shame almost killed me. Okay? So to me, that was my spiritual experience. So when I got here, I wasn't real sure about step two because I'd already had my spiritual experience back there in that church. Now, I wasn't applying anything to my life. As I said, I professed to believe in God, but I didn't live that way. You know, I had a lot of knowledge, but knowledge wouldn't keep me sober. You know, the availability of knowledge today is very, very high in the modern day. You know, we can find knowledge, you know, on our phone. But the rate of relapse has not decreased any with all this knowledge out there. So you're not going to stay sober on knowledge. I couldn't stay sober on knowledge. You know, recovery is about application. It's not about the acquisition of knowledge. Recovery is experiential. It's not intellectual. I can remember early on somebody telling me, Mary Lou, you're just like my husband. You're too intelligent to get sober. And I didn't know whether she was complimenting me or insulting me. Because I didn't really think her husband was that intelligent, but that's beside the point. The big book tells us that the only defense from taking that first drink must come from a higher power. Must come from a higher power. No. Bill tells us that the concept of a higher power exists in all of us, and it has always been there. Page 55. In the big book. Bill writes, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or others it is there. For faith in a higher power, for faith in a power greater than ourselves, and the miraculous demonstration of the power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as feelings we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fiercely for it, but he was there when we searched. He was as much a part of us as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. I'm sorry, God.
Wow, good show.
It was so with us. So Bill tells us that no matter how we get here, no matter what our beliefs are or aren't when we get here, inside of us is still a glimmer of the Spirit. You know, it's there. We just have to look for it. We just have to find it. Then Bill goes on, he tells us about the solution. And that's on page 28. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough. How do we find our higher power? First of all, you become willing and become honest. And sometimes that sounds just too simple. Just too simple. No, we need to find someone or something that we can trust. Step two asks us to entertain the idea that help is available. I no longer have to rely on self-will, which wasn't really doing me much good. Okay? Wasn't working. We are not told who or what this power is. Instead, we are invited to explore for ourselves and make up our own minds. God doesn't tell us what to believe. AA doesn't tell us what to believe. It just says we have to believe in something other than ourselves. Okay. Now, in a chapter to the agnostic, we're just asked that we open our minds to the possibility of a higher power. Just open our minds to the possibility that there may be something greater than ourselves. And in the chapter to the agnostic, it talks about a man who had been very, very religious, became a drunk, was basically in and out of asylums and hospitals, and was considered hopeless. And he was told by a doctor that the only people who seemed to be recovering from this type of hopeless alcoholism were people who found a spiritual experience. And this man became very, very angry because he said, you know, I have asked God for help. If there is a God, why did he let all this stuff happen to me? And finally one day, though, it just kind of a light bulb went off in his head, and he asked himself, who am I to question God? And from that point on, he never drank again, okay? Seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. God had restored his sanity. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe. Circumstances made him willing to believe. He humbly offered himself to his Maker. Then he knew. Even so has God restored us to our right minds. And the us he's referring to here are the first 100 people who became sober and were involved in writing the book. Even so has God restored us to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly. But he has come to all who honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. All we have to do is seek. All we have to do is open our minds. All we have to do is be willing to think that maybe there's something greater than ourselves. You know, this phrase, came to believe, doesn't, it implies that it takes time. It doesn't say we believed. We came to believe, and then we were restored to sanity. It takes time. We are not immediately restored. Now, if you have a problem with the concept of a higher power, I encourage you to get out a piece of paper and go someplace where it's quiet and quiet your mind and just reflect on what characteristics, what attributes do you think that a loving, caring parent should have? And write those characteristics and those attributes down. And allow that to begin to form your concept of your higher power. Because that's the way I view my higher power today. Now, he's not a punishing God. He's not somebody out there waiting to zap me as soon as I do something wrong. You know, he accepts my humanness. He accepts the fact that I'm not perfect. I view him as a loving, caring father who only wants the best for me. You know, I've heard it said when I was in rehab, they said, you know, anything can be your higher power. That chair can be your higher power. That doorknob can be your higher power. I do not believe that inanimate objects can be your higher power. Okay? I mean, that chair, if I'm angry enough, I can totally destroy that chair. It does not have any power over me. Okay? Same thing with our doorknob. I can rip it off the door. So, you know, but where I began to believe was in the rooms, okay, in the people. You know, there's how many people here tonight? Maybe 15. So we got 15 times the power in this room right now as I have just sending home by myself on my own. So I find power here. You know, in chapter 6, in the action on page 84, and this is at the beginning of step 10. It says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will react sanely and normally. And this is at step 10, at the beginning of step 10. It tells us that by the time we get to step 10, our sanity should have been restored. How did this happen? How do I get from this raging, angry, fearful, guilt-ridden, pathetic woman that walked in the doors of AA to somebody who can react fairly normally to life circumstances, who can live life on life's terms? How do I get there? How did that happen? It's real simple. The way I got there was by following the simple directions laid out in the first 84 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. know, that's where I find my design for living life. That's where I find a power greater than myself. That's where I was restored to sanity. Okay. It's in those pages. Appendix 2 talks about a spiritual experience. I gotta get going here. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls an educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. He realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. And one day, I don't know, I was about 2.5 years sober, and I finally, I'm in my kitchen, and it just hit me. I thought, I'm not angry today. I'm not afraid. I don't have anxiety today. And when I looked back, reflected back on the week, I really hadn't had any anger. And I thought, and I think I'm starting to feel this happiness stuff that these people talk about. Okay? And that was a strange feeling to me. I didn't know how to be happy. I had to learn. Okay, God, I'm hurrying. Recovery is an action program. Okay. Bill tells us that step two, we only have to ask ourselves one simple question, and that's on page 47. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. It's built on willingness. Okay? Now, in step one, I identified the problem and came to accept the we of the program. In step two, I saw that you had a higher power, and since I identified with you in step one, I thought maybe I better find one too, because I identified that I was like you, and if it was working for you, maybe it would work for me. And something could help me because it was helping you. I came to believe because I saw you were getting better. The main objective of the big book, it tells us, don't believe. The lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how did we find this power? That is exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will help you solve your problems. And that's all this book's about, is finding a higher power. So pick it up, open it up, and start reading where you see words. Step one, I can't. Step two, he can. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Maria. Thank you for a great message on step two. Do we have any questions? Out in the audience.
So we move away, he does.
Another fact I picked up on when I was doing some research here, the word God is stated 132 times in the first 164 pages of the book, and the pronoun for God is 80 times, so little over 200 times God is referred to specifically in the first 164 pages of the big book, which is our text.
You touched on it a little bit, but I kind of feel lucky when I came to the program. I was always kind of spiritually curious, so I gave it a try, it didn't work so well. I've often wondered, I still understand the power of it, and they tell people to focus on the room with the higher power. I recently had somewhere about starting a program with the willingness and the rest of the time. That makes perfect sense. What I don't understand is, I can see that being a good way to get people to open up to the program too, but and maybe I'll touch on this next week, but right at step three, I get stuck because what else besides a God God that you're going to pray to that needs that next step?
Okay, well, you know, it is a process, okay? And we reach it at various points. I had a strong religious background, but it wasn't spiritual. And it's in these rooms and the people that I found my spirituality. To me, God speaks through these people. God is going to put the people in my life that I need. All I have to do is be open and willing, and I'm going to hear what I need to hear to get me to the point that I can believe. And that's why, you know, you can use the rooms, the people in the rooms, because God's going to work through those people to give you what you need. Do I actually pray to that? No, you know, that's why I say I can't. An inanimate object, a creator, the great spirit, God is my God, Jesus Christ, but, that's how I believe, but.
So if you're responsible for somebody
that you believe in that God, do they stay at step 2? Oh, no, they would, I would encourage them to find a God of their understanding, and we would start with, okay, let's, what are you looking for in a God? What do you want him to be or her to be? Let's define what you want. And just, begin searching. I'd also refer them to, we have a book, let's see it here. We have a book, an AA book called Came to Believe. It has many, many stories in it on how people found, how people reach this point in their journey. Working, but anyway.
Mary Lou, would you? Regarding God per se, focus. is that I am not a higher power. And if I was, I wasn't doing such a great job prior to coming into the room, so maybe I'd better pay attention and surrender.
And that's like, for a while, even though I believed, I didn't trust God. He was only going to punish me. And so the way I used my sponsor for a power greater than myself, instead of praying, I would call her, and I would just talk, you know, I would have talk with her about it. And when I finally did start praying, I liked her God. Her God's name was, she called her God Buddy. And when I finally did start praying prayers, you know, I prayed to Buddy, Gretchen God. You know, and I just slowly found the God of my understanding that does live inside me today. But yeah, as long as you aren't relying on self-will. So that's why it's so important that we reach the point where we're willing to ask for help. And that's why we have to accept the we of the program. You know, we admit it.
Thank you very much, Mary Lou.
Okay. Nature, you know, go for a walk and talk to nature.
Okay, thank you very much for your presentation on step two. Glad you were here. Glad you were here. We'll be here next week for step three. Okay, do we have any announcements before we close? Okay, we have a nice way to close with the Serenity Prayer.
Coffee pot.
I don't know
where
it's at. I don't know.
Is it
our pot?
Yeah.
That one is not ours. Ours disappeared.
Thank you.
Here's 150. So, I'm just going to roll this on a bit. So,
this is not going to work.
Where's this going to
be? Oh, you can keep that one if you want more. You can keep that one.
Yeah.
I know, I never got any.